The government is being urged to back Australia if it takes China to the World Trade Organization over crippling wine tariffs. China put tariffs of up to 200% on all Australian wine imports last week, accusing producers of dumping wine into China at a discount rate. The Australian government denies this. Waikato University Professor Alexander Gillespie says if Australia takes its complaints to the WTO, New Zealand should give it its support. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern is with us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Is that something that you would do? You would give Australia its support in that circumstance?
Well, I think that the first thing I would say is that we have an expectation that everyone, that particularly obviously our WTO members, are following the rules. And of course, everyone is entitled to take action in accordance with their own view as to whether or not those are being followed. When it comes to any potential action in the WTO on wine tariffs, look, I wouldn't want to go further than that at this stage. It's very, very early on, but of course, we have that expectation, as we would with anyone with us.
So you would not commit at this stage to backing Australia if that is the route that they take. Is that because you fear a backlash from China yourself?
No. All I'm saying is, Susie, this is something that's been put to me in the last hour. I don't want to make statements on that without actually having seen what specifically has been put to the WTO. However, we of course have an expectation that the rules of the World Trade Organization and the agreements that we are held to are upheld, because of course that's an incredibly important institution for us, and we expect those rules to be followed by those that we trade with.
But we talk about having a very close relationship with Australia, the Anzac spirit. Also, of course, there is the Five Eyes connection. Is that not something where Australia would expect us to show up, frankly?
As I said, Susie, I'm not saying that either way. I'm saying this has been something that's been put to me in the last hour. And, of course, I would want to have a bit more information in front of me before I give commitments around where New Zealand's putting its weight and claims that are being made within the WTO. Of course, we've been in the odd trade dispute with Australia from time to time as well. And so, yes, we have a very close relationship there, but I would want to make sure that I spend a bit more time looking at that before I make any statements on it. You know, more broadly, though, you know, I have been asked whether or not what the implications are of specifically what Australia is experiencing on tariffs around wine. I think it's fair to say that they do have a different level of, you know, in that market, that is one of their biggest markets for wine as an export for them, not to the same degree for New Zealand. China is our eighth largest wine export market. It's only taking about 2% of our total exports. So we are in a different category there.
Well, let's wait and see, I guess, in terms of how that one plays out. If we could also talk a little bit. Fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the Royal Commission. This is into Christchurch and the report there. Why is it that there's going to be wide-ranging suppression orders that will prevent the publication of the submissions of current or former government ministers and heads of public sector agencies? They're going to be in place for 30 years. Why is that?
And that's ultimately a question and a decision that hasn't been made by us.
Who made the decision?
The Royal Commission. So just for some context there, Susie, a Royal Commission is entirely independent from us. And in fact, you know, that's why they are very costly exercises. They take a lot of time because essentially as soon as we have written the terms of reference and appointed the individuals who oversee them, then they are completely separate to us because they are independent, totally independent.
Totally independent, but nonetheless, Prime Minister, is this something that you feel is suitable? Because in terms of people getting answers, in terms of people understanding what went wrong, there are going to be significant gaps left there. And how does that, let me finish the question, how does that help the individuals whose lives were, in some cases, absolutely ripped apart that day?
Well, I think unfortunately what you've done is made an assumption there that their decision around the suppression of who has provided individual evidence, that somehow has stopped them being able to draw their conclusions. They are obliged to. The terms of reference say that they must, as part of their inquiry, determine whether or not there was anything that could or should have been done in order to protect or prevent the attack that we saw. And so they are required to at least report on that alongside a number of other elements within the terms of reference. And so they've obviously made a decision that the way in which they deal with individual evidence does not prohibit them from drawing those conclusions.
But nonetheless, it is giving people...
I can just give one other rationale that they've provided. They have, as I understand, said that they didn't want to, A, stop free and frank engagement with them, and B, they didn't want to create, you know, a manual of sorts for any future attacks. So that is their decision, and I have to respect that decision.
Indeed. Anjum Rahman, though, saying the suppressions would not allow the public a clear view of any opportunities to stop the attack that may have been missed and by who. So this is going to be the problem, isn't it? That people are not going to perhaps have the faith in the inquiry and the outcomes because they cannot see where the information has come from.
Well, Susie, I think probably we should have this debate and discussion after what is an 800-page report is publicly released, because unfortunately I'm in the position at the moment of having seen that report and it's not in the public domain yet, so we are you know, speculating as to whether or not that is the case. And so I'm happy to get into a bit more detail once it's released, and then people will be able to draw a conclusion as to whether or not the Royal Commission's choice over suppression orders have created that environment or not.
Okay. Let's also talk child poverty. The Child Poverty Action Group has released a report, a kind of report card, if you like, on the welfare report that was done a couple of years ago, saying half of key recommendations in that have not been implemented in any way. None of the key recommendations have been fully implemented. Have you sat on your hands for this, on this, for 2 years?
No, and it won't surprise you, Susie, that there are elements of what the Child Poverty Action Group have said that I just disagree with. For instance, they've said that no progress. They've scored it a red on the issue of income adequacy. And of course, that's in amongst the choice of having even acknowledged partial progress. They say none.
And so, what would you score it?
I just disagree with that. It is fair to say that we have not had the 40% increase in some cases in benefits that was recommended by the welfare advisory.
Well, 47% was what was recommended. But I'm just asking you, how would you score it?
Just finish, Susie. We at the time said that that was something that we wouldn't be able to do. However, to say that there's been no progress, when we have, for instance, indexed benefits to wages, which was one of the recommendations, we have had a general benefit increase of $25 a week. We have the winter energy payment, which we brought in, the Best Start payment, family tax credit increases, which means that a significant number of sole parents are, for instance, on average, $100 a week better off. To say that is no progress, I do disagree, respectfully.
So what would you score it then? Because the scoring system is red, orange, yellow, green. How would you score it?
Well, of course, I very openly say they are scoring against the Welfare Expert Advisory Group. And we, of course, said on what they said that we wouldn't go as far. So I totally accept that they're never going to give it the green light because we disagreed with it in that respect when it was released. But I absolutely disagree with the idea that we've done nothing on income adequacy. We've had, as I've said, a long list, over $5 billion that was just in our first 100 days.
That's not answering the question. And lots of people saying that the money that has been given has made little or no difference. People saying also from the Child Poverty Action Group that the time for excuses is up. And in the manifesto, there's been rhetoric but no action. You are asking...
Susie, that $100 a week makes no difference to a sole parent, I just cannot accept that. And look, that has been the area where it's been most significant because we focused on child poverty. So we focused on households with children. Of course, we've seen increases in other areas, but that has been the most significant and we stand by that.
But you were also asking, Prime Minister, you were asking children to wait. And the Child Poverty Action Group are saying children cannot wait. Their minds, emotions, bodies are constantly developing. And this development can be affected by chronic stress and lack of essentials.
And Susie, I disagree with that. We did not ask them to wait. We, in fact, for instance, didn't even wait to our first budget. Within the first 100 days, we bought back the first universal child payment since it was disestablished by the national government in the 1990s. We did that across the first 3 years of a child's life, knowing that was the most critical time. It is a per-child payment. If you have, for instance, two children under three, an extra $120 goes into that household. That's on top of, then, the indexing of benefits to wages, which was a recommendation of the Welfare Expert Advisory Group, the winter energy payment, the family tax credit increases. Again, all of this is significant. Is it everything? No. And I've never claimed that, because we need to keep making progress across each term, and we will. But to dismiss what have been the most significant changes in a generation to welfare, I think is unfair. And so I will stand my ground on that.
Thank you very much for your time, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern there.